Lula and I got a bucket and took it to a table.
So let me get this straight, Lula said. Eddie DeChooch goes to Richmond and picks up some cigarettes. While DeChooch is in Richmond, Louis D. buys the farm, and something gets screwed up. We don't know what.
I selected a piece of chicken and nodded.
Chuchu comes back to Trenton with the cigarettes, drops them off with Dougie, and then gets himself arrested trying to take the rest of the cigarettes to New York.
I nodded some more.
Next thing, Loretta Ricci is dead, and Chooch takes off on us.
Yep, and then Dougie goes missing. Benny and Ziggy are looking for Chooch. Chooch is looking for something, again, we don't know what, and somebody steals Dougie's pot roast.
And now Muna's missing too, Lula said. Chooch thought Muna had the something. You told Chooch you had the something, and Chooch offered you money, but no Muna.
Yeah.
That's the dumbest load of shit I ever heard, Lula said, biting into a chicken thigh.
She stopped talking and chewing and opened her eyes wide.
Ugh, she said.
Then she started waving her arms and clutching her throat.
Are you okay?
I asked. More throat clutching.
Whack her on the back,
someone offered from another table.
That doesn't work, someone else said. You're supposed to do that Heimlich thing.
I ran around to Lula and tried to wrap my arms around her to do the Heimlich, but my arms wouldn't go all the way around. A big guy walked over from the counter, got Lula in a bear hug from behind, and squeezed.
Ptuh,
Lula said, and a piece of chicken flew out of her mouth and hit a kid two tables over in the head.
You've gotta lose some weight, I said to Lula. It's just I got big bones, Lula said.
Everything quieted down, and Lula sucked on her milkshake.
I had an idea while I was dying, Lula said. It's clear what you got to do next. Tell Chooch you've decided to make the deal for money. Then we snatch him when he comes to pick up the thing. And after we got him, we make him talk.
We haven't had much luck snatching him so far.
Yeah, but what have you got to lose here? He's going to be picking up nothing.
True.
You should call up Mary Maggie the mud wrestler and tell her we'll deal, Lula said.
I found my cell phone and dialed Mary Maggie, but there was no answer. I left my name and number and asked her to return my call. I was putting my cell phone back in my shoulder bag when Joyce stormed in.
I saw your car in the lot, Joyce said. You expect to find a Chooch in here eating chicken?
He just left, Lula said. We could have brought him in, but we thought it was too easy. We like a challenge.
You two wouldn't know what to do with a challenge, Joyce said. You're losers, Fatso and Ditso. You two are pathetic.
Yeah, well, we're not so pathetic. We got a chow mein problem, Lula said.
That caught Joyce short for a moment, not sure if Lula was in on the dastardly deed or merely provoking her. Joyce's pager chirped. Joyce checked the readout and her lips curled back in a smile.
I have to go. I have a lead on DeChooch. It's a shame you two bimbos don't have anything better to do than sit here filling your faces. But then, from the looks of you, I guess that's what you do best.
Yeah, and from the looks of you, I guess what you do best is fetch sticks and howl at the moon, Lula said.
Fuck you, Joyce said, and flounced off to her car.
Huh, Lula said. I expected something more original than that. Think Joyce must be off her form today.
Know what we should do? I said. We should follow her. Lula was already gathering the food together.
You read my mind,
Lula said. The moment Joyce left the lot, we were out the door and into the CRV. Lula had the bucket of chicken and biscuits on her lap. We shoved the shakes into the drink holders and took off.
I bet she's a big liar, Lula said. I bet there's no lead. She's probably going to the mall.
I stayed a couple cars back so she wouldn't make me, and Lula and I kept our eyes glued to the back bumper of Joyce's SUV. There were two heads visible through Joyce's rear window. She had someone riding shotgun with her.
She's not going to the mall, I said. She's going in the opposite direction. Looks like she's heading for Center City.
10 minutes later, I had a bad feeling about Joyce's destination.
I know where she's going, I said to Lula.
She's going to talk to Mary Maggie Mason. Someone told her about the white Cadillac. I followed Joyce into the parking garage, keeping well behind. I parked two lanes over from her, and Lula and I sat tight and watched.
Uh-oh, Lula said. There she goes, her and her flunky. They're going up to talk to Mary Maggie.
Damn, I know Joyce too well. I've seen her work. She'll go in like gangbusters, guns drawn, and search room to room claiming just cause. It's a sort of behavior that gives bounty hunting a bad reputation. And even worse, it sometimes gets results. If Eddie DeChooch is hiding under Mary Maggie's bed, Joyce will find him. I didn't recognize her partner from this distance. They were both dressed in black T-shirts and black cargo pants, with bond enforcement printed in bright yellow on the back of their shirts.
Boy, Lula said, they got costumes. How come we don't have costumes?
Because we don't want to look like a couple goons?
Yep, that's the answer I was thinking of.
I jumped out of the car and yelled at Joyce. Hey, Joyce, I said, wait a minute. I want to talk to you. Joyce whirled around in surprise. Her eyes narrowed when she saw me, and she said something to her partner. The conversation didn't carry to me. Joyce punched the up button. The elevator doors opened, and Joyce and her partner disappeared. Lula and I got to the elevator seconds after the doors closed. We pressed the button and waited a few minutes.
Know what I think? Lula said. I don't think this elevator's going to show up. I think Joyce is holding on to it.
We started up the stairs, fast at first, and then slower.
Something wrong with my legs, Lula said at the fifth floor. I got rubber legs. They don't want work anymore.
Keep going.
Easy for you to say. You're dragging that bony-ass body of yours up these stairs. Look what I'm hauling.
It wasn't easy for me to say at all. I was sweating and I could barely breathe.
We've got to get into shape, I said to Lula. We should go to a gym or something.
I'd sooner set myself on fire.
That about summed it up for me, too. We staggered out of the stairwell into the hall at the seventh floor. Mary Maggie's door was open, and Mary Maggie and Joyce were shouting at each other.
If you don't get out of here this second, I'm calling the police, Mary Maggie yelled.
I am the police, Joyce yelled back.
Oh, yeah? Where's your badge?
It's here on this chain on my neck.
That's a fake badge. You bought that badge from a catalog. I'm telling on you. I'm calling the police and telling them you're impersonating a cop.
I'm not impersonating anybody, Joyce said. I never said I was the Trenton police. I happen to be the Bond police. You happen to be the Dodo police, Lula said, wheezing.
Now that I was closer, I recognized Joyce's partner. It was Janice Molnari. I went to school with Janice. Janice was an okay person. I couldn't help wondering what she was doing working for Joyce.
Stephanie, Janice said. Long time no see.
Not since Loretta Bieber's shower.
How's it going?
Janice asked.
Pretty good.
How's it with you?
Pretty good. My kids are all in school now, so I thought I'd try working part-time.
How long have you been with Joyce?
About 2 hours, Janice said. This is my first job.
Joyce had a sidearm strapped to her thigh, and she had her hand on the sidearm.
So what are you doing here, Plum? Following me around so you can see how it's done?
That's it, Mary Maggie said. I want all of you out, now!
Joyce shoved Lula toward the door.
You heard her. Move it.
Hey, Lula said, giving Joyce a shot in the shoulder.
Who you telling to move it?
I'm telling you to move it, you big tub of lard, Joyce said.
Better to be a tub of lard than chow mein barf and dog duty, Lula said.
Joyce gave a gasp.
How do you know? I didn't tell you all that.
Her eyes opened wide.
It's you. You're the one.
Besides the gun, Joyce was wearing a utility belt complete with cuffs, defense spray, stun gun, and baton. She pulled the stun gun out of the belt and flipped it on.
I'm going to make you pay, Joyce said. I'm going to fry you. I'm going to stick this to you until my battery is dead and you're nothing but a pool of liquefied fat slime.
Lula looked down at her hands. No purse in either of them. We left our purses in the car. She felt her pockets. No weapons there, either.
Uh-oh,
Lula said. Joyce lunged at her, and Lula shrieked and whipped around and ran down the hall to the stairs. Joyce took off after her, and we all ran after Lula and Joyce. Me first, then Mary Maggie, then Janice. Lula might not be much going up the stairs, but once she got momentum going down, she was uncatchable. Lula was a freight train in motion. Lula got to the garage level and crashed through the door. She was halfway to the car when Joyce caught her and straight-armed her with the stun gun. Lula stopped short, swayed in place for a second, and went down like a sack of wet cement. Joyce reached out to give Lula another buzz, and I tackled Joyce from behind. The stun gun flew out of her hand, and we fell to the floor. And just then, Eddie DeChooch pulled into the underground garage in Mary Maggie's white Cadillac. Janice saw him first.
Hey, is that the old guy in the white Cadillac?
She asked. Joyce and I picked our heads up and looked. DeChooch was inching along, looking for a parking space.
Get out! Mary Maggie yelled to DeChooch. Get out of the garage!
Joyce scrambled to her feet and took off running toward DeChooch.
Get him! Joyce yelled to Janice. Don't let him get away.
Get him?
Janice asked, standing beside Lula.
What is she, crazy? How am I supposed to get him?
I don't want anything to happen to my car, Mary Maggie shouted to Joyce and me. That was my Uncle Ted's car.
Lula was on all fours and drooling.
What? She said. Who?
Janice and I got Lula to her feet. Mary Maggie was still yelling to DeChooch, and DeChooch was still not seeing her. I left Lula with Janice and ran for my Honda. I cranked the engine over and wheeled around behind DeChooch. I don't know how I expected to catch him, but it seemed like the thing to do. Joyce jumped out in front of DeChooch, gun drawn, and shouted for him to stop. DeChooch stomped on the gas and plowed ahead. Joyce stumbled to safety and fired off a shot, missing DeChooch, but hitting a back window. DeChooch left turn down a lane of parked cars. I followed after him, taking corners on two wheels as he raced in blind panic. We were doing a loop, DeChooch not able to find the exit. Mary Maggie was still yelling, and Lula was on her feet and waving her arms.
Wait for me, Lula yelled, looking like she wanted to run, not sure of the direction.
I did a lap past Lula, and she jumped into the car. The back door was wrenched open, and Janice catapulted herself into the back seat. Joyce had gone back for her car and had positioned it partially across the exit. She had the driver door open and stood behind the open door with her guns steadied. DeChooch finally found the right lane and headed for the exit. He drove straight at Joyce. She fired off a shot that missed entirely and then threw herself to the side as DeChooch roared past, ripping Joyce's car door off its hinges, the impact rocketing the door into the air. I zipped out the exit behind DeChooch. The Cadillac's right front quarter panel had suffered some damage, but clearly it wasn't anything that bothered Chuchi. He turned onto Spring Street with me close on his bumper. He followed Spring to Broad, and suddenly we were in stopped traffic.
We got him, Lula yelled. Everybody out of the car.
Lula and Janice and I bolted from the car and ran to apprehend DeChooch. DeChooch threw the Cadillac into reverse and rammed the CRV, bouncing it back several feet into the car behind. He pulled the wheel around and angled himself out, grazing the bumper on the car in front of him. Lula was yelling at him the whole time.
We got the thing, she yelled, and we want the money. We decided we want the money.
DeChooch didn't look like he was hearing anything. He did a U-turn and took off, leaving us in his dust. Lula and Janice and I watched him hurtle down the street. And then we turned our attention to the CRV. It was crumpled up like an accordion.
Now this really makes me mad, Lula said. He made my shake get spilled, and I paid good money for that shake.
Let me get this straight, Vinny said. You're telling me that DeChooch smashed up your car and broke Barnhart's leg?
Actually, it was the car door that broke Joyce's leg, I said. When it flew off her car, it kind of did a flip in the air and came down on her leg.
We wouldn't have known about her except the ambulance had to squeeze past us on the way to the hospital. They were just getting ready to tow our car away when the ambulance came along, and there was Joyce all trussed up inside, Lula said.
So where is DeChooch now?
Vinny wanted to know.
We don't exactly got the answer to that question, Lula said, and being that we haven't got transportation, we have no way of finding out.
What about your car? Vinny asked Lula.
In the shop. I'm having it detailed, and then they're putting some custom paint on it. I won't get it back until next week.
He turned to me.
What about the Buick? You always drive the Buick when you have car problems.
My sister's driving the Buick. Chapter 10
I got a motorcycle out back I can let you have, Vinny said. I just took it in on a bond. The guy was short money, so he gave me the bike. I already got my garage filled with crap. I can't fit a bike in there.
People cleaned out their houses to buy their bonds. Vinny took in stereos, televisions, mink coats, computer systems, and gym equipment. He bonded out Madame Zaretsky once and took her whip and her trained dog. Ordinarily, I'd jump at the chance to have a bike. I got my license a couple years ago when I was dating a guy who owned a cycle shop. I've looked at bikes from time to time, but never had the money to buy one. The problem now is that a bike isn't the ideal vehicle for a bounty hunter.
I don't want a bike, I said. What am I going to do with a bike? I can't bring an FTA in on a bike.
Yeah, and what about me? Lula said. How are you going to fit a full-figured woman like me on a bike? And what about my hair? I'll have to put one of them helmets on and it'll ruin my hair.
Take it or leave it, Vinny said.
I did a big sigh and rolled my eyes. This bike come with helmets?
They're in the back room.
Lula and I shuffled out to see the bike.
This is going to be an embarrassment, Lula said, opening the back door. This is going to be... Hold on. Look at this. Holy crap. This isn't just a dumbass bike. This is a hog.
It was a Harley-Davidson FXDL Dyna Lowrider. It was black with custom green flames and custom pipes. Lula was right. It wasn't just a dumbass bike. It was a wet dream.
You know how to drive one of these? Lula asked.
I smiled at her.
Oh, yeah, I said. Oh, yeah.
Lula and I strapped on the helmets and straddled the bike. I put the key in the ignition, kicked it over, and the Harley rumbled under me.
Houston, we have liftoff, I said,
and then I had a small orgasm. I rode up and down the alley behind Vinny's office a couple times, getting the feel of the bike, and then I headed for Mary Maggie's condo building. I wanted to take another crack at talking to Mary Maggie.
Don't look like she's here,
Lula said after the first turn around the parking garage.
I don't see her Porsche.
I wasn't surprised. She was probably off somewhere inspecting the damage on the Cadillac. She's wrestling tonight, I said to Lula. We can talk to her then. I checked out the cars in the lot to my apartment building when I pulled in. No white Cadillac, no black limo, no Ziggy and Benny car, no yum Porsche, no megabucks and probably stolen Ranger car. Only Joe's truck. Joe was slouched in front of the television with a beer in his hand when I walked in.
I heard you smashed up your car, he said.
Yeah, but I'm okay.
I heard that, too.
DeChooch is wacko. He shoots at people. He deliberately runs people down. What's the deal with him? That's not normal behavior, even for an old mob guy. I mean, I know he's depressed, but yeesh. I went into the kitchen and gave Rex a piece of biscuit I'd saved from lunch. Morelli followed me into the kitchen.
How'd you get home?
Vinny loaned me a bike.
A bike? What kind of bike?
A Harley. A Dinah lowrider. His eyes and his mouth creased in a smile.
You're riding around on a hog?
Yes, and I had a sexual experience on it already.
All by yourself?
Yes. Morelli gave a bark of laughter and moved toward me, pressing me against the counter, his hands circling my ribcage, his mouth brushing my ear, my neck.
Bet I can improve on it.
The sun had gone down, and it was dark in my bedroom. Morelli was asleep beside me. Even in sleep, Morelli radiated contained energy. His body was lean and hard. His mouth was soft and sensual. The planes of his face had become more angular with age, his eyes more wary. He'd seen a lot as a cop. Too much, maybe. I glanced over at the clock. 8.
8? Yikes! I must have been asleep, too. 1 minute we were making love, and the next thing it was 8 o'clock.
I shook Morelli awake.
It's 8 o'clock, I said.
Uh-huh.
Bob, where's Bob?
Morelli bolted out of bed.
Shit, I came here right from work. Bob hasn't had supper.
The unspoken thought was that Bob would have eaten everything by now. The couch, the television, the baseboards.
Get your clothes on, Morelli said. We'll feed Bob and go out for pizza, and then you can spend the night.
I can't. I have to work tonight. Lula and I didn't get to talk to Mary Maggie today, so I'm going to the snake pit. She's wrestling at 10.
I don't have time to argue, Morelli said. Bob's probably eaten through a wall by now. Come over when you're done at the pit.
He grabbed me and kissed me and ran down the hall.
Okay, I said,
but Morelli was already gone. I wasn't sure what one wore to the pit, but slut hair seemed like a good idea, so I did the hot roller and teasing thing. This increased my height from 5'7" to 5'10". I tarted myself up with a lot of makeup, added a short black spandex skirt and 4-inch heels, and I felt very kick-ass. I grabbed my leather jacket and took the car keys from the kitchen counter.
Hold on. These weren't car keys. These were motorcycle keys. Shit! I'd never get my hair in the helmet.
Don't panic, I told myself. Just think about this a minute. Where can you get a car?
Valerie.
Valerie has the Buick. I'll call her up and tell her I'm going out to a place where there are half-naked women. I mean, that's what lesbians want to see, right? 10 minutes later, Valerie picked me up in the lot. She still had her hair slicked back behind her ears and was devoid of makeup, with the exception of blood-red lipstick. She was wearing men's black wingtips, a charcoal pinstripe suit with slacks, and a white shirt that was open at the neck. I resisted the urge to check to see if there was chest hair sprouting from the open neck.
How'd it go today? I asked her.
I got new shoes. Look at them. Aren't they excellent? I think they're perfect lesbian shoes.
You have to give Valerie credit. She never did anything halfway. I mean about the job.
The job didn't work out. I guess that's to be expected. If at first you don't succeed...
She put her weight behind the wheel and managed to get the Buick to take a corner.
I got the girls enrolled in school, though. I guess that's something positive.
Lula was waiting on the curb when we got to her house.
This is my sister Valerie, I told Lula. She's coming along because she has the car.
Looks like she shops in the men's department.
She's taking it for a test drive.
Hey, whatever,
Lula said. The parking lot to the snake pit was jammed, so we parked a half mile down on the street. By the time we got to the door, my feet were killing me, and I was thinking there were advantages to being a lesbian. Valerie's shoes looked nice and comfy. We got a table in the back and ordered drinks.
How are we going to get to talk to Mary Maggie? Lula wanted to know. We can't hardly see from here.
I checked this place out. There are only 2 doors, so after Mary Maggie does the mud thing, we'll each take a door and catch her leaving.
Sounds like a plan to me,
Lula said, belting back her drink and ordering another. There were a few women with dates, but mostly the room was filled with men, looking serious, hoping a G-string would get ripped off in the mud, which I assume is the equivalent to sacking the quarterback. Valerie's eyes were wide, hard to tell if they were reflecting excitement or hysteria.
"Are you sure I'll meet lesbians here?"
she shouted above the noise. Lula and I looked around. We didn't see any lesbians, at least not any who looked like Valerie.
"You never know when lesbians are going to show up," Lula said. "Probably you should have another drink. You look kind of pale."
I sent the note to Mary Maggie on the next drink order. I told her my table and told her I had a message I wanted passed on to Eddie DeChooch. A half hour later, I still hadn't heard from Mary Maggie. Lula had put away four cosmopolitans and was looking stone-cold sober, and Valerie had chugged two glasses of Chablis and was looking very happy. Women were wailing away at each other in the pit. Once in a while, a hapless drunken male would get pulled into the ooze and flail around until he swallowed a gallon of muck and was expelled by the bouncer. There was a lot of hair-pulling and bitch-slapping and sliding around. I guess mud is slippery. So far, no one got their G-string removed, but there was a bunch of mud-slicked bare breasts that were bloated to the bursting point with implants. All in all, the whole thing didn't look too appealing, and I was happy I had a job where people shot at me. Better than wallowing in the mud, half-naked. Mary Maggie's match was announced, and Mary Maggie came out dressed in a silver bikini. I was beginning to see a theme here. Silver Porsche, silver bikini. There was a lot of cheering. Mary Maggie is famous. Then the other woman came out. Her name was Animal, and just between you and me, I didn't think it looked good for Mary Maggie. Animal's eyes were glowing red, and it was hard to tell from the distance, but I'm pretty sure she had snakes in her hair. The announcer rang the bell, and the two women circled and then lunged. They did this with little success for a while, and then Mary Maggie slipped, and Animal pounced on her. This brought the entire room to standing, including Lula and Valerie and me. We were all yelling, wanting Mary Maggie to disembowel Animal. Of course, Mary Maggie had too much class to disembowel Animal, so they thrashed in the mud for a few minutes, and then started taunting the audience, wanting their own unfortunate drunken male. "You!" Mary Maggie said, pointing in my direction. I looked around, hoping to find a sex-crazed guy waving a 20 standing just behind me. Mary Maggie took the microphone.
"We have a special guest here tonight. We have the Bounty Hunter, also known as the Cadillac Wrecker, also known as the Harasser."
Oh, boy.
"You want to talk to me, Bounty Hunter?" Mary Maggie asked. "Step right up."
"Maybe later," I said, thinking Mary Maggie's stage personality wasn't at all like the bookworm I'd met earlier.
"We'll talk after the show," I told her. "Don't want to take up your valuable time while you're on stage."
And then suddenly I was being lifted into the air by two very large men. I was being carried, still seated in my chair, 6 feet off the floor, to the ring.
"Help!" I yelped. "Help!"
I was held high above the ring. Mary Maggie smiled, and Animal growled and rotated her head. And then the chair tipped, and I did a free fall into the mud. Animal pulled me to my feet by my hair.
"Relax," she said. "This will be painless."
Then she tore my shirt off. Good thing I was wearing my good lace bra from Victoria's Secret. In the next instant, we all went down in a screaming pack. Mary Maggie Mason, Animal, and me. And then Lula waded in.
"Hey," Lula said. "We just come here to talk, and you're ruining my friend's skirt. We're going to give you a dry cleaning bill." "Oh, yeah? Well, bill this," Animal said.
And she yanked Lula's foot out from under her, sending Lula to her ass in the mud.
"Now you made me mad," Lula said. "I was trying to explain things to you, but now you made me mad."
I'd managed to pull myself to my feet while Lula was sparring with Animal. I was wiping the mud from my eyes when Mary Maggie Mason took a flying leap at me and pinned me face down in the mud again.
"Help!" I yelled. "Help!"
Stop picking on my friend, Lula said. And she grabbed Mary Maggie by the hair and flung her out of the ring like a rag doll. Crash! Direct hit on a table at ringside. Two more women wrestlers ran out from the wings and jumped in the ring. Lula tossed one out and sat on the other. Animal jumped off the ropes at Lula. Lula let out a blood-curdling shriek and went down in the mud with Animal. Mary Maggie was back in the ring. The other wrestler was back in the ring. And some drunken guy climbed in. Now there were seven of us in the ring, rolling around, locked together. I was grabbing for anything I could find, trying to keep from smothering in the mud, and somehow I got a grip on Animal's G-string. And then everyone was hooting and cheering, and the bouncers jumped into the ring and separated us.
Hey, Lula said, still swinging. I lost my shoe. Somebody better find my shoe, or I'm never coming here again.
The stage manager had Lula by the arm.
Don't worry, we'll take care of it. Step this way, right through the door.
And before we realized what was happening, we were out on the street. Lula with only one shoe, and me with no shirt. The door opened again, and Valerie got tossed out, along with our coats and purses.
There was something wrong with that animal person, Valerie said. When you ripped her pants off, she was bald down there.
Valerie dropped me off at Morelli's house and waved goodbye. Morelli opened the door and said the obvious.
You're covered with mud.
It didn't work out exactly as planned.
I like the no-shirt look. I could get used to it.
I stripped in the hall, and Morelli took my clothes directly to the washer. I was still standing there when he returned. I was wearing the 4-inch heels and mud and nothing more. I'd like to take a shower, I told him. But if you'd rather I didn't track mud up the stairs, you can just throw a bucket of water at me in the backyard.
I know this is probably sick, Morelli said. But I'm getting hard.
Morelli lives in a row house on Slater, just a short distance from the Berg. He'd inherited the house from his Aunt Rose, and he'd made it a home. Go figure that. The world is filled with mysteries. His house felt a lot like my parents' house, narrow and spare in luxuries, but filled with comforting smells and memories. In Morelli's case, the smells were reheated pizza, dog, and fresh paint. Morelli was little by little working on window trim. We were at his kitchen table, me, Morelli, and Bob. Morelli was eating a slice of raisin cinnamon toast and drinking coffee. And Bob and I ate everything else in the refrigerator. Nothing like a big breakfast after a night of mud wrestling. I was wearing one of Morelli's t-shirts, a borrowed pair of sweats, and I was barefoot since my shoes were still wet inside and out and would probably get tossed in the trash. Morelli was dressed for work in his plain clothes, cop clothes. I don't get it, I said to Morelli. This guy is riding around in a white Cadillac, and the police aren't picking him up. Why is that?
Probably he's not riding around a lot. He's been spotted a couple times, but not by anyone who's been in a position to go after him. Once by Mickey Green on bicycle patrol, once by a blue and white stuck in traffic. And he's not a priority. It isn't like there's someone assigned full-time to finding him.
He's a murderer. That's not a priority.
He's not exactly wanted for murder. Loretta Ricci died of a heart attack. At this point, he's only wanted for questioning.
I think he stole a pot roast from Dougie's freezer.
Well, that ups the ante. That'll put him on the priority list for sure.
Don't you think it's weird that he'd steal a pot roast?
When you've been a cop for as long as I have, you don't think anything is weird.
Morelli finished his coffee, rinsed his cup, and put it in the dishwasher.
I have to go. Are you going to stay here?
No. I need a ride back to my apartment. I've got things to do and people to see. And I could use a pair of shoes. Morelli dropped me at the door to my building. I walked in barefoot, wearing Morelli's clothes, carrying mine. Mr. Morgenstern was in the lobby.
Must have been some night,
he said.
I'll give you $10 if you'll tell me the details.
No way. You're too young.
How about 20? Only thing is, you'll have to wait until the first of the month when I get my Social Security check.
10 minutes later, I was dressed and out the door. I wanted to get Melvin Baylor before he left for work. In honor of the Harley, I dressed in boots, jeans, t-shirt, and my Shots leather jacket. I roared out of the parking lot and caught Melvin attempting to unlock his car. The lock had rusted, and Melvin was having a hard time turning the key. Why he bothered locking it at all was beyond me. No one would want to steal this car. He was dressed in suit and tie, and with the exception of dark circles under his eyes, he looked much better.
I hate to bother you, I said, but you need to go to court and reschedule your date.
What about work? I'm supposed to go to work.
Melvin Baylor was a very nice schnook. How he ever got the nerve to take a leak on the cake was a mystery. You'll have to go in late. I'll call Vinny and have him meet us at the municipal building, and hopefully it won't take long.
I can't get my car open.
Then you're in for a treat, because you get to ride on my bike.
I hate this car, Melvin said.
He stepped back and kicked the car in the door, and a big piece of rusted metal fell off. He grabbed the side mirror and ripped it off and threw it onto the ground.
Fucking car,
he said, kicking the mirror across the street.
That's good, I said, but maybe we should go now.
I'm not done, Melvin said, trying his key on the trunk, having no luck there either.
Fuck, he yelled.
He climbed up the bumper onto the trunk and jumped up and down. He climbed onto the roof and did more jumping.
Melvin, I said, you're a little out of control here.
I hate my life. I hate my car. I hate this suit.
He half fell, half jumped off the car and tried the trunk again. This time he got it open. He rummaged around in the trunk and came up with a baseball bat.
Aha, he said.
Oh boy.
Melvin hauled off and whacked the car with the bat. He whacked it again and again, working up a sweat. He whacked a side window, sending glass flying. He stepped back and looked at his hand. It had a big gash in it. Blood was everywhere. Shit. I got off the bike and sat Melvin down on the curb. Every housewife on the block was standing on the street, watching the show.
I need a towel here, I said.
Then I called Valerie and told her to bring the Buick to Melvin's house. Valerie arrived a couple minutes later. Melvin had his hand wrapped in a towel, but his suit and shoes were spattered with blood. Valerie got out of the car, took one look at Melvin, and keeled over. Crash! Onto the Seligs' lawn. I left Valerie on the lawn and drove Melvin to the emergency room. I got him settled in and drove back to the Seligs'. I didn't have time to sit and wait for Melvin to get stitched up. Unless he went into shock from blood loss, he'd probably be there for hours before seeing a doctor. Valerie was standing on the curb looking confused.
I didn't know what to do, she said. I don't know how to drive a motorcycle.
No problem. You can have the Buick back.
What happened to Melvin?
Temper tantrum. He'll be fine. A drop-in at the office was next on my list. I thought I'd dressed for the day, but Lula made me look like an amateur. She was wearing boots from the Harley store, leather pants, leather vest, keys on a chain that clipped to her belt. And draped over her chair was a leather jacket with fringe running the length of the arm and a Harley emblem stitched across the back.
Just in case we gotta go out on the bike, she said.
Fearsome, leather-clad, black biker chick causes havoc on highways. Traffic tied up for miles due to rubbernecking motorists.
You better sit down so I can tell you about DeChooch,
Connie said to me. I looked to Lula. Do you know about DeChooch? Lula's face broke into a smile.
Yeah, Connie told me when I came in this morning. And she's right. You better sit down.
Oh, only people in the family know about this,
Connie said.
It's been kept real quiet, so you have to keep it to yourself.
What family are we talking about here?
The family.
Gotcha.
So here it is.
Lula was already chuckling, unable to contain herself.
I'm sorry, she said. It just cracks me up. Wait until you hear this. You'll fall off the chair.
Eddie DeChooch set up a deal for contraband cigarettes,
Connie said.
He figured it was a small operation and he could handle it himself. So he rented a truck and drove to Richmond to pick up the cartons of cigarettes. While he's there, Louis D. has a fatal heart attack. As you may know, Louis D. is from Jersey. All his life he's lived in Jersey, and then a couple years ago he relocated to Richmond to manage some business operations. So when Louis D. goes toes up, DeChooch gets on the phone and immediately notifies the Jersey family. The first person DeChooch calls, of course, is Anthony Thumbs.
Connie paused, leant forward, and lowered her voice.
Do you know who I'm talking about when I say Anthony Thumbs?
I nodded. Anthony Thumbs controls Trenton, which I guess is a dubious honor, being that Trenton isn't exactly the center of the universe for mob activity. His real name is Anthony Thumbelli, but everyone calls him Anthony Thumbs. Since Thumbelli isn't a common Italian name, I can only assume it was fabricated on Ellis Island and stuck, just as my grandfather Plum's name was shortened from Plumeri by an overworked immigration clerk. Connie went on.
Anthony Thumbs has never been especially fond of Louis D., but Louis D. is related in some obscure way, and Anthony knows the family plot is in Trenton. So Anthony Thumbs does the right thing as head of the family and tells DeChooch to escort Louis D. back to Jersey for burial. Only Anthony Thumbs, who's not known as being the world's most eloquent guy, says to Eddie DeChooch, who can't hear for anything, "Bring the fart to me." That's a direct quote. Anthony Thumbs says to Eddie DeChooch, "Bring the fart to me." DeChooch knows there's no love lost between Louis D. and Anthony Thumbs, and DeChooch thinks it's a vendetta thing, and thinks Anthony Thumbs said, "Bring the heart to me."
My mouth dropped open.
What?
Connie was grinning, and tears of laughter were streaming down Lula's cheeks.
I love this part, Lula said. I love this part.
I swear to God, Connie said, DeChooch thought Anthony Thumbs wanted Louis D.'s heart. So DeChooch breaks into the funeral home late at night and does a very nice job of slicing into Louis D. and removing his heart. Had to crack a couple ribs to do it, apparently. The funeral director said...
Connie had to stop a minute to compose herself.
The funeral director said he'd never seen such a professional job.
Lula and Connie were laughing so hard they had to steady themselves with both hands on Connie's desk to keep from rolling on the floor. I clapped a hand over my mouth, not knowing whether to join them laughing or go my own route and throw up. Connie blew her nose and wiped the tears away with a clean tissue.
Okay. So DeChooch puts the heart in an igloo cooler with some ice and takes off for Trenton with the cigarettes and the heart. He brings the cooler to Anthony Thumbs, proud as anything, and tells him he's got Louis D.'s heart. Anthony goes nuts, of course, and tells DeChooch to take the fucking heart back to Richmond and have the undertaker return it to Louis D. Everyone's sworn to secrecy, because this is not only embarrassing, it's dangerously disrespectful between two family factions that don't get along all that well during the best of times. And on top of that, Louis D.'s wife, who is a very religious woman, is freaking because Louis's been desecrated. Sophia De Stefano has set herself up as the protector of Louis's immortal soul and is hell-bent to see Louis buried whole. And she's given DeChooch an ultimatum that either he gets Louis's heart back in Louis's body, or DeChooch will be hamburger.
Hamburger?
One of Louis's operations was a meat processing plant.
I gave an involuntary shiver.
Now, here's where it gets confusing. DeChooch somehow loses the heart.
It was so bizarre, I wasn't sure if Connie was telling me the truth, or if she and Lula had concocted the whole thing as a joke.
He lost the heart, I said. How could he lose the heart?
Connie did a palms up, like she couldn't totally believe it.
I got it all from my Aunt Flo, and that's as much as she knows.
No wonder DeChooch is depressed.
Fucking A, Lula said.
Where does Loretta Ricci fit into this? Another palms up from Connie.
Don't know.
Mooner and Dougie?
Don't know that either,
Connie said. So DeChooch is looking for Louis D's heart. Connie was still smiling. Connie really liked this.
Apparently.
I thought about it for a minute. Somewhere along the way, DeChooch decided Dougie had the heart. Then he decided Mooner had the heart.
Yeah, Lula said, and now he thinks you have the heart.
A bunch of black dots danced across my field of vision, and bells started clanging in my head.
Uh-oh, Lula said. You don't look so good.
I put my head between my legs and tried to take a deep breath.
He thinks I have Louis D's heart, I said. He thinks I'm walking around with a heart. My God, what kind of a person walks around with a dead guy's heart?
I thought we were talking about drugs. I thought I was trading some coke for Mooner. How am I ever going to pull off a swap for a heart?
Don't seem like anything you have to worry about, Lula said, since DeChooch doesn't have Mooner or Dougie.
I told Connie and Lula about the limo and Mooner.
Isn't that perfect, Lula said. Some old lady kidnapped the Mooner. Maybe it was Louis D's wife trying to get Louis's heart back.
You better hope it wasn't Louis D's wife, Connie said. She makes Morelli's grandmother look sane. There's a story told about her that she thought a neighbor disrespected her. And the next day, the woman was found dead with her tongue cut out.
She made Louis kill the woman?
No, Connie said. Louis wasn't home at the time. He was away on business.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, it's probably not Sophia because I hear she's been locked in a house ever since Louis died, lighting candles and praying and cursing DeChooch.
Connie thought about it for a minute.
You know who else could have kidnapped Mooner? Louis D's sister, Estelle Colucci.
It wouldn't be difficult to kidnap Mooner either. All you have to do is offer Mooner a joint and he'll happily follow you to the ends of the earth. Maybe we should go talk to Estelle Colucci, I said to Lula.
I'm ready to roll, Lula said.
Benny and Estelle Colucci live in a nicely maintained duplex in the Berg. For that matter, just about every house in the Berg is nicely maintained. It's mandatory for survival. Decorating taste might vary, but windows damn well better be clean. I parked the bike in front of the Colucci house, walked to the door, and knocked. No answer. Lula pushed into the bushes under the front windows and looked inside.
Don't see anyone, Lula said. No lights on. Television's not going.
We tried the club next. No Benny. I drove two blocks to Hamilton and recognized Benny's car at the corner of Hamilton and Grand, parked in front of the Tip Top sandwich shop. Lula and I squinted in through the plate glass window. Benny and Ziggy were inside, having a late breakfast. The Tip Top is a narrow, hole-in-the-wall cafe that serves homemade food for reasonable prices. The green and black linoleum on the floor is cracked. The overhead light fixtures are dim from grime. The naugahyde seats in the booths are patched with duct tape. Mickey Spritz was an army cook during the Korean conflict. He opened the Tip Top when he got out of the army 30 years ago, and he hasn't changed a thing since. Not the flooring, the booth seats, the menu. Mickey and his wife do all the cooking, and a retarded man, Pookie Potter, busses the tables and washes the dishes. Benny and Ziggy were concentrating on eating their eggs when Lula and I approached.
Jeez,
Benny said, looking up from his eggs, gaping at Lula in full leather.
Where do you find these people?
We stopped by your house, I said to Benny. No one was home.
Yeah, that's because I'm here.
What about Estelle? Estelle wasn't home either.
We had a death in the family,
Benny said.
Estelle is out of town for a couple days.
I guess you're talking about Louis D., I said. And the screw-up. I had Benny and Ziggy's attention now.
You know about the screw-up?
Benny asked. I know about the heart.
Jesus H. Christ,
Benny said.
I thought you were bluffing.
Where's Mooner?
I'm telling you, I don't know where he is, but my wife is driving me fucking nuts over this heart thing. You gotta give me the heart. That's all I hear about, how I gotta get the heart. I'm only human, you know what I mean? I can't take it anymore.
Benny isn't well himself, Ziggy said. He has conditions, too. You should give him the heart so he can have some peace. It's the right thing to do.
And just think about Louis D. laying there without his heart,
Benny said.
That's not nice. You should have your heart when they put you in the ground.
When did Estelle leave for Richmond?
Monday.
That's the day Mooner disappeared, I said. Benny leaned forward.
What are you suggesting?
That Estelle snatched Mooner. Benny and Ziggy looked at each other. They hadn't considered this possibility.
Estelle doesn't do stuff like that,
Benny said. How did she get to Richmond? Did she take a limo?
No, she drove. She was going to Richmond to visit Louis D.'s wife, Sophia, and then she was going to Norfolk. We got a daughter there.
I don't suppose you have a picture of Estelle with you. Benny pulled his wallet out and showed me a picture of Estelle. She was a pleasant-looking woman with a round face and short gray hair.
Well, I've got the heart, and now it's up to you to find out who has Mooner, I said.
And Lula and I left.
Holy shit, Lula said when we were on the bike. You were so freaking cool in there. You actually had me thinking you knew what you were doing. Like, I was almost thinking you had the heart.
Lula and I went back to the office, and my cell phone buzzed just as I walked through the door.
Is your grandmother with you? My mother wanted to know. She walked to the bakery early this morning to get some rolls, and she hasn't come back.
I haven't seen her.
Your father went out to look for her, but he couldn't find her. And I've called all her friends. She's been gone for hours.
How many hours?
I don't know. A couple. It's just that it's not like her. She always comes right home from the bakery.
Okay, I said. I'll go look for Grandma. Give me a call if she turns up. I disconnected, and my phone immediately rang again. It was Eddie DeChooch.
Do you still have the heart?
He wanted to know.
Yes.
Well, I've got something to trade.
I had a bad feeling in my stomach. Mooner?
Guess again.
There was some scuffling, and then Grandma came on the line.
What's this business about a heart?
Grandma wanted to know.
It's sort of complicated. Are you okay?
I've got a little arthritis in my knee today.
No, I mean, is Choochie treating you all right?
I could hear Chooch in the background prompting Grandma.
Tell her you're kidnapped, he was saying. Tell her I'm going to blow your head off if she doesn't give me the heart.
I'm not telling her that, Grandma said. How would that sound? And don't get any funny ideas either. Just because I'm kidnapped doesn't mean I'm easy. I'm not doing anything with you, unless you take precautions. I'm not taking any chances getting one of them diseases.
DeChooch came back on the line.
Here's the deal. You take your cell phone and Louis D.'s heart to Quaker Bridge Mall, and I'll call you at 7 o'clock. Any cops come in on this, and your granny's dead.
Chapter 11.
What was that all about?
Lula wanted to know. DeChooch has Grandma Mazur. He wants to trade her for the heart. I'm supposed to take the heart to Quaker Bridge Mall, and he's going to call me at 7 with further instructions. He said he'll kill her if I bring the police into it.
Kidnappers always say that, Lula said. It's in the kidnapper handbook.
What are you going to do?
Connie wanted to know.
Do you have any idea who has the heart?
Hold up here, Lula said. Louis D. don't have his name engraved on his heart. Why don't we just get another heart? How's Eddie DeChooch going to know if it's Louis D.'s heart? I bet we could give Eddie DeChooch a cow heart and he wouldn't know. We just go to a butcher and tell him we need a cow heart. We don't go to a butcher in the burg because word might get around. We go to some other butcher. I know a couple over on Stark Street. Or we could try Price Chopper.
They got a real good meat department. I'm surprised DeChooch didn't come up with this. I mean, nobody has ever seen Louis D's heart except for DeChooch, and DeChooch can't see for shit. DeChooch probably took that pot roast out of Dougie's freezer thinking it was the heart.
Lula's come up with something here, Connie said. It might work.
I picked my head up from between my legs. It's creepy.
Yeah, Lula said. That's the best part.
She looked at the clock on the wall.
It's lunchtime. Let's go get a burger, and then we'll get a heart.
I used Connie's phone to call my mother. Don't worry about Grandma, I said. I know where she is, and I'm going to pick her up later tonight. Then I hung up before my mother could ask questions. After lunch, Lula and I went to Price Chopper.
We need a heart, Lula said to the butcher, and it has to be in good condition.
Sorry, he said. We don't have any hearts. How about some other kind of organ meat, like liver? We have some nice calf livers.
Has to be a heart, Lula said. You know where we can get a heart?
So far as I know, they all go to a dog food factory in Arkansas.
We haven't got time to go to Arkansas, Lula said. Thanks anyway.
On the way out, we stopped at a display of picnic necessities and bought a small red and white igloo.